folks, Chuck Holton here. Thanks for watching the Hot Zone. I've got Zach the Russian on with me again. If you have been watching the show, you saw the two-part series we did with him this a couple months ago now. And Zach is in Georgia now. And I just wanted to get an update and see how things are going. So Zach, tell me a little bit about, for people who didn't watch the first episode, introduce yourself and explain why you're in Georgia and what you're doing there. And then let's talk about that.
Yeah, sure. Hey, Chuck. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on your podcast, and hello, viewers. Yeah, my name is Zach. I'm 21 years old from Russia, left Russia March 3rd, 2022, once the war started, because I went to the protests. And then eventually this was dangerous to stay in Russia. So I left to Georgia, Tbilisi. And the only reason, to be honest, I left to Georgia, I mean, there are a couple of them, but the main one is because kind of like visa-free regime with Georgia. Actually, I think every foreigner, not citizens of Russia, you can come to Georgia for almost a year, like 364 days, stay here unlimited, no limitations at all. Then you can just, you know, go for one day, make like a visa run, as it is called, yep, for one day, come back, and you'll get another year. So basically, you can stay here forever. And Georgia is a cheap country. You know, most of the people, I would say most of the like mature old people, they speak English or they speak Russian, and also young people speak English. So, you know, I'm comfortable speaking both languages. That's also one of the reasons why I moved to Georgia. And, you know, it's pretty close to my friends who are still in Russia and who cannot leave. But if they just want to, you know, visit me, it's not like, you know, going to, let's say, Argentina. Because when I was living in Russia, one of the lists which I had is like South America. It's like funny, as Nazis after the Second World War run into Argentina. I felt kind of like the same in a way. Yeah.
Well, I live in Panama full time, and it is very nice there for sure. But one of the reasons that I chose Panama is because it's close to the United States and it's easy to go back and forth and visit. Now that I have grandchildren, that's very important.
Sure.
So you came in March to Georgia. There are lots and lots and lots of Russians did the same, and also went to places like Armenia and Turkey and other places. What has your experience been like in Georgia with the people there? Are they friendly? Are they, you know, mad because there are so many Russians there, or what?
Yeah, Georgia, it is really important to understand the background of relationships between Russia and Georgia, because 20% of Georgia is occupied by Russia. There are two regions, which is Abkhazia, which is borders with Russia at the western northern part of Georgia, and also Ossetia. That's a region, how we call it in Russian, maybe in Georgian it sounds different. And those regions are occupied by Russia, and it's basically 20% of Russia, of Georgia. And because of it, of course, there are tensions with Russians. You know, nobody wants to have occupants in their home country. And so many Russians came to Georgia just because, you know, it's close and visa regime is pretty chill. And of course, yeah, there are some tensions, but I wouldn't say that there is Russophobia, as Russian propaganda used to, you know, fear everyone with that. When I came in March, it was actually a really interesting experience, because every single taxi driver with whom I was riding with, they just felt like it's their duty when they hear that I'm from Russia to ask my opinion on the war. And once I say, yes, I'm against the war, Slava Ukraini, they would be like, okay, you're my brother, if you need any help, just call me. And they even asked me for a barbecue with their families. So once in Georgia you show your position, people really, like, you know, treat you well as any other person. And yeah, in March, I would say also that in March there are two waves of Russian immigrants. The first one is in March, April, you know, once the war started. And those who are the Russians, as we call intelligent, those who are, let's say, at least they can make money online. So those are the IT workers, you know, software developers. Those are, you know, bloggers with myself. Those are the teachers of English who can teach remotely. I met so many of them here in Tbilisi. those are, you know, different political activists. So those are the people who were first wave immigrants from Russia to Georgia. But then when the mobilization started, you know, 21st of September, I remember this date as 24th of February, and so many of Russians fled to Georgia trying to escape mobilization. And oh my gosh, those Russians are, you know, they are way different from the first wave of immigrants. Because I remember, like, just an example, I was hosting some of a Russian family with a cat. They literally, you know, escaped, just a young couple, 27, 28 years old, and a cat in the back. And they told me the story how they were running from Russia and they were stuck at the border between Russia and Georgia for like 30 hours. With a cat with a back inside, and they had to march with the cat for like 15 kilometers just to get closer to the border, because there were news that Russia is going to close the borders at all. So people were trying to, you know, it looked like some zombie apocalypse movie. So many people were trying just to get into small entrance to Georgia, because those roads, that border between Russia and Georgia is really like mountainous. There are so many mountains and the roads are really like how do you say, narrow. It was a disaster for, you know, I think it's going to be remembered in the Russian history for a long time. And of course, this bloody war with Ukraine. And those Russians who came after the second wave, they are way different, I would say. Because even that family that I hosted, they were thinking, okay, we will enter Georgia from Abkhazia region. And Abkhazia region is occupied by Russia, and it is impossible to enter Georgia from that region. And
it'd be like crossing the front lines to get into Ukraine. That's not a friendly border.
Yeah, right. So when they came, they were confused. Why didn't they able to make it to Georgia from Abkhazia? And I was like, guys, have you heard about 2008 invasion of Russia to Georgia? And they were like, sorry, what do you mean? Like, they never heard of it. And those were, you know, the guy was like a marketologist, and the girl was like a teacher of English. So those are the people who are, you know, working with the brain. They should be like more intelligent than, let's say, like the person who works at the factory for the most time and, you know, doesn't really make intelligent labor. So even they didn't know about much of like Russian, let's say, invasions and just, you know, how foreign policies. So those Russians started to...
I mean, that's just sort of a picture of how Russian propaganda is so pervasive inside Russia that you don't know anything about some of the things that Russia doesn't want you to know about. So, for example, when the invasion started here in Ukraine, many Russian soldiers came from the north, from Belarus, down through the Chernobyl exclusion zone, and they got held up there. And so these guys dug foxholes in the dead zone of Chernobyl, into the sand that was brought in and put over the radioactive dirt that's going to be radioactive for thousands of years. And they were not told anything about it. Those guys didn't know anything about the disaster that happened in 1986 in Chernobyl. And so as a result, there were like 8 busloads of Russian soldiers who died from acute radiation poisoning because they dug foxholes into that soil. And to this day, if you go to Chernobyl, those foxholes are there and the radiation level is sky high because they uncovered all of that and they were never told about anything like that. So it's fascinating look at the control that Russia has over what you see when you live in Russia and what you understand about that. We've learned a lot about that from guys here in Ukraine that tell us about during the Soviet times, what they were told about America. And, you know, the reality of America versus what they were told about America is two very different things. What we understood about Russia at that time, or about the Soviet Union, was not exactly correct, but was quite a bit closer to reality because we have a free press, and the free press mm-hmm. can say what it wants, right? So yeah. That's fascinating to hear. Now, were those people as against the war as the first wave of people?
I would say, of course, they are against the war. Like, at least those people whom I hosted, I ended up hosting something about four families. And personally, I didn't know them. They were just friends of my friends of my friends. Some of the friends actually were whom I met in the US while my exchange program. And it was quite fascinating how, you know, in the really hard times, people try to connect and to find at least some help from anyone. Yeah, they were against the war, but they just didn't know much. They were like, yes, we heard there is a war, but we try to not to read the news because it's depressing, it's hard, we do not understand. And there was also one guy whom I hosted. He was about 20, 24, 23. And when we were discussing the war, he was like, yeah, the war is bad, but I don't really know. Maybe, you know, it's not that obvious who is wrong. I was like, no, man, it is freaking obvious. You know, Russia invade, like, it's the huge invasion, the first huge war in Europe since the Second World War. And Russia invades another country. No, man, it is obvious. And he was like, oh, maybe. So, you know, those people who were fleeing Russia after, you know, in the second wave of immigration, they are a bit different, with a bit different mentality. And it kind of a little bit wastes the, how would you say, the picture of Russian in Georgian mentality. And I started to see there are so many graffitis on the streets of Tbilisi. Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, was like, oh, Russians, go home, like, fuck Russians, or et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there were such graffitis before, but since mobilization, so many more.
You're and talking also, about graffiti on the walls, right?
Yeah, graffiti on the walls, on the metro, just, you know, on the buildings. Yeah, Tbilisi is a pretty, you know, colorful city. There are many, like, murals, but also some of the graffitis, and there are many, like, Russia related and politics related right now. Yeah. Speaking of about how those Russians who fled mobilization, where do they live? What do they do? Well, basically, there is a city of Batumi. It's the city on the shore of the Black Sea. Mm-hmm. It used to be a Russian speaking city. I mean, yeah, Georgians live there, but they just used to speak Russian more than Georgian language. And most of Russians who wants to be, like, you know, out of that, you know, hate towards Russians, they just go to Batumi, and there they just feel like home, like Russia, basically, because everyone speaks Russian. It looks approximately the same, and they just go there. And also, it's less, it's cheaper. It's cheaper, way cheaper than Tbilisi. Because, oh my gosh, since so many Russians came, the rent prices in Tbilisi, they went skyrocketing. Because, you know, as far as I've heard, 120,000 Russians came to Tbilisi after the mobilization, and I think approximately the same number came before mobilization, like since March up to September. So imagine, Tbilisi is not a huge city; it's like 1.3 million people living here. And once your city, you know, the population grows by 15 or 10%, of course, there's going to be problems with accommodation. Yeah, so absolutely. The prices for rent, they went skyrocketing. For example, my friend Natasha, she is a holder of YouTube channel called Natasha's Adventure, previous year Russia. She came to Georgia before mobilization in like 5th of September, but she didn't want to find an apartment right away. So she was staying in a hotel. But then once mobilization, you know, was cold, 21st of September, she started to look for apartments, and it appeared that the prices in one day doubled up. So the price, so for example, you could rent a one-bedroom apartment before in a really good neighborhood of Sabortalo for $500. But in the second day, like 22nd of September, it was $1,000. And right now it's about $1,300 for, and Georgia is kind of like, you know, it's a, not the most wealthy country. The average salary.
Yeah, Georgia's a pretty cheap country, just like Armenia. And the same thing happened in Armenia. That's amazing. I mean, those kind of numbers, when you look at what the number of Russians who went to Armenia as well, you're talking about probably a million people between Georgia and Armenia, two tiny little countries.
Yeah.
And the exact same things happening, rents going through the roof, prices going up. You can't swing a dead cat in Yerevan without hitting a Russian. And not that you would want to, but, but, you know, and just fascinating that doesn't include people who went to Turkey. That doesn't include people who went elsewhere. And all of them are having to face the same kinds of questions now. Am I ever going to get to go home? Because, you know, well, what, let me ask you this, your family back in Russia and friends back in Russia, when you talk to them, what are those conversations like now?
Oh yeah. Oh well, mostly let's discuss firstly my family. Of course I call my mom more often, and my mom is trying to avoid, the topic of the war, but all the time I'm trying to bring it up because that's at least the only one thing that I can do to change my mom's opinion about it. If I would just give up, I cannot change anything. And many of my friends, they also got their parents believe in propaganda or believe in some conspiracy theories, and they give up after some time trying to change their opinion. But if you give up, the chances that you can change their opinion about the war and to change at least something, they are zero. But if you just try, there is like a couple of percent, but those are at least something. And throughout this war, my mom changed her opinion about the war so many times. Oh my gosh. So she, at first point, she believed propaganda. Then I had a really long conversation with her, and then she started to question that propaganda. She started to be against the war, and then so she started to, just to read some. It's kind of like a meme in Russia that people over 40s, they used to only use WhatsApp, and there are not much of a communities on WhatsApp, like videos. You can only send messages, forward messages to other people, and those forwarded messages with some propaganda statements, they are all over Russian WhatsApp. And usually, like, people who are over 40s, they are under that propaganda. I'm not being ageistic, that's like just how it works in Russia. And my mom, after those messages, she tends to believe not me, but more of her friend from her work forwarded her some message, which is in my opinion is being sent directly from FSB or somewhere. Just I'm not
your
joking.
Family's from the Western, or I'm sorry, from Eastern Russia, right? You came from the
yeah,
Eastern.
Yeah.
Is the sentiment there different than it would be in Moscow?
I'm sorry, the internet.
Is the feeling in the eastern part of Russia, because that's very far away from Moscow, is it any different out there than it would be like in Moscow?
I wouldn't say it is too, well, Moscow, in my opinion, we actually, as Russians, as young Russians, we used to say that Moscow is not Russia. Because Moscow is absolutely different city by the standards of living, by salaries, by pensions, by everything. It's like a really big European comfortable city by all standards. All Americans say that. But the rest of Russia is way different. And let's compare some, Western region as like, Vladimirskaya Oblast, like Vladimir region. And the far east of Russia, like my Khabarovsk territory, I wouldn't say it should be different because, most of the young and protestive people who are supposed to be more protestive than others, they just go to Moscow for a better quality of life, as I did when I was 17 and entered the university. So some people say that the far east of Russia is more protestive because it's so far from Moscow, 7,000 kilometers away. And we don't really feel this bond to, Moscow, the capital of Russia. And also, what kind of shows that it's more protestive in 2019, in 2020, there were huge protests in Khabarovsk regions about Sergei Furgal, who was the governor of Khabarovsk territory. And he was more popular in Khabarovsk territory than Putin. And there was a leaked video when somebody from the administration of president came to Sergei Furgal and his administration in Khabarovsk, and they said, how so the governor is being more popular in Russia than the president? So after that, they just, they jailed him and he's still in prison. Wow. And after that, so many people went out to the streets of Khabarovsk. There were like maybe 20,000 people in Khabarovsk going to the protests. And some of the protests lasted for 100 days. Every day people were going out to the streets. Even policemen were supporting this protest. They didn't really stop anyone. But then another governor was sent from Moscow to Khabarovsk, Dikhtyarov, and he started to fight the protest really, really bad, and well, he succeeded in the end. So yeah, maybe some people would say that, and I remember I was watching those, protests, and I participated myself, and I was watching like live chat from a translation from the protest, and people from all over Russia, they were saying, oh yeah, Moscow with us, like Novgorod with us, we're supporting your fight for your governor, for your freedom, in a way.
Now that you've been in Georgia for several months, what has been the most difficult thing about moving to Georgia?
Well, I'd say just, you know, leaving your homeland at the age of 20 is always supposed to be hard. So this kind of, you know, the kind of like the age I'm leaving Russia, it was pretty hard for me because many of the things I'm not used to, you know, do myself, and I gotta learn to live by myself. I mean, I used to live in a dorm in Moscow when I went to the US for the half a year, but when I was living in a dorm, it was Russia still was, you know, way easier for me. And in the US, I was living in the host family, so everything was kind of prepared for me and done for me. But here I gotta settle up life by myself, find an apartment myself, find you know, everything I need myself to settle up my life. I wouldn't say it is too different because Georgia is still a post-Soviet country, as and many things are, let's say, they just similar to Russia. I would say that it's kind of like the emotional level of just an emotions that you feel when you're being in a country that is occupied by your country. And all the time I go to, you know, public places, I'm always trying to speak English because I'm just ashamed of, you know, speaking Russian sometimes. But once people hear my Russian accent, they're going to be like, oh, you know, we can switch to Russian if you want to. So, you know, still there is this pressure. I remember I went to Turkey in June just to visit my friends who also fled not mobilization, but the war in March. And in Turkey, I felt like, okay, like there is literally, it feels like there is no war. And people who go to Turkey, I think they are trying to isolate from the news, from the war, from this pressure, which you get in Georgia. And I just, you know, it feels, this pressure feels in Georgia. And of course, it's really hard not to remember about the war in Georgia. I'm not trying to avoid it, but many of the Russians, I think they just want to, like, just want to forget.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, they just want to leave Russia forever. Many of them, not myself though. So yeah, there are quite a few hard things about being in Georgia as Russian, but you know, it's just nothing comparing to what happens in Ukraine in the war.
Basically. Well, it sounds like you've got a close circle of friends and you know, people that you can that are going through the same thing you are, that you can all help each other, and that's a big deal. That's one of the biggest reasons that I enjoy going to church. I mean, other than the spiritual aspects of church, church is a guaranteed place where you have family. And so wherever I go in the world, when I go to church, I'm with my family. And there's a group of people there whose specific purpose is to help each other and to love each other and to provide that companionship. And when I get lonely, especially here in Ukraine, after months and months away from my family, I go to church on Sunday and I feel like I'm at home. So that's very important. That community, that sense of belonging is super important. And I'm glad that you found something like that. How can people get in touch with you or watch your stuff or anything like that to support you as you do your thing online?
Yeah, sure. My channel is called Zach the Russian, Zach with a CK, not CH. I also have my Gmail. It is under in the description of the video on my YouTube channel, I mean. And also have an Instagram, just Zach the Russian. You can type it and you can just DM me. I'm not a huge YouTuber, so I mostly answer most of the DMs. So yeah, feel free.
Awesome. Good. Well, thank you for spending some time with us today. It's fascinating to get a chance to talk to you. This is what they call first source journalism right here. You know, talking to the people that are experiencing it on the ground. And this is the kind of thing that is very difficult to get through the mainstream media anymore. So I really enjoy getting a chance to interface with people around the world. Isn't it amazing to think, you know, here's this kid from the eastern part of Russia that's gone to Georgia. Here's this guy from that lives in Panama. That's stuck in Ukraine, you know, for the last 6 months, and we can have meaningful conversations because of this technology. I just love it. It's awesome. So thanks again.
Yeah, me too. Me too, Chuck.
We'll be
thank you so much for having me. Yeah, thank you for having me on your channel.
All right.
Sure. Okay. So, yeah. Thank you so much.